Welcome to episode 74 of the Planning Period Podcast, your Ed Breakroom. I'm your host, Brad Scheffler. This week is our second educational movie review. On this episode, former guest, fellow education podcaster, and friend Dan Krynas joins me to talk about Dead Poets Society. Dead Poets Society, as I'm sure you know, is the 1989 film starring John Williams as the unorthodox English teacher at a private, prestigious boys' boarding school. Dan and I have a great chat about the instructional practices featured in the movie, the struggles between the goals different stakeholders see for education, and the pride we can and should take in our students. So, sit back and enjoy episode 74 of the Planning Period Podcast, Educational Movie Review of Dead Poets Society. Hello, everybody, and welcome to this special episode of the Planning Period Podcast. I'm your host, as always, Brad Scheffler. This episode is going to be our second episode of the educational movie reviews, where we take a movie and we dive into the educational practices and the things that we take out of the movie as educators. And for this second edition, I was approached by my good friend who I've met a couple times in life and have talked to online a number of times, a former guest on the show, fellow podcast. All around really cool guy, the one and only Dan Krynas. How you doing tonight, man?
Good. Thanks for the intro. Thanks for having me back. I enjoyed being on the podcast before. I've enjoyed even more getting to know you and meet you in person. And so, yeah, I'm glad to be here.
Yeah, man, it's been good. We got to hang out at ISTE a little bit, and then you actually came down to Orlando for a little family vacation, and we popped over, and my son and I joined you for a couple rides out at Universal, and you know, I showed you how to do Men in Black correctly, and it was good.
I know,
times.
Yeah, I still need to know your secrets. So it was crazy.
So you got the choices. You gave me three choices, and we put it up for a vote, and the winner was what movie are we going to be talking about tonight?
We are going to be talking about Dead Poets Society, and to be totally honest and transparent with your listeners here, it wasn't necessarily my first choice. I would have preferred one of the other choices, but I do really love this movie, and it is on the all-time list for me in terms of, you know, when I think of educational movies and movies that just have impacted and inspired me, this is high up there, so I'm really excited to talk about it.
Yeah, I am too. You know, it's one of those movies that in my head, I'm sure I've seen this, but watching it the other night, I don't know that I've ever actually watched this movie all the way through in a single sitting.
I have. I've seen it. I've definitely seen it many times, and it had been a little while, and I was glad that I refreshed my memory on it. But when I rewatched it, I was like, man, this is so familiar.
Yeah. I mean, I remember the critical scene. So, I mean, obviously I've seen scenes of it. I mean, the standing on the desk and the "Oh, Captain, my Captain" and some of that stuff and some of the Robin Williams, you know, soliloquies he goes into for a while. Like some of that stuff I remember, but I don't know that I've ever watched all these movies. I was telling my wife, cause her and I watched it and together, and she's like, I don't know that I've ever seen this. And I said, I think it's that one of those movies that they used to play when there was a sub, like when they'd roll in the TV cart with a sub, they'd throw this on in English. And so I don't know that I ever actually paid attention when the movie was on.
Yeah, I hear you. And it probably, you know, obviously didn't resonate with a student like it probably will with a teacher. But, you know, really funny quick story about the rolling cart and watching a movie. I was in sixth grade, and right around that time, technology had advanced to the point where obviously we didn't have smartwatches back then. But there was such a thing that existed where there was a watch with VCR controls on it. And I had a friend who really liked to mess with the teacher as we were watching movies in class by pressing the buttons on his watch.
That's pretty awesome. That's pretty
cool. It was a lot of fun for us, not so much for the teacher.
I'm surprised more kids don't do that with their smartphones. Just as a side note, I've had that thought before where like a lot of smartphones can control TVs and stuff. And I'm always surprised that kids don't do that more often.
Yeah. Yeah.
But let's talk a little bit about the movie. So this was one of your three choices. This is the one people voted for. And I think it's a good choice. I'm really torn. And I started to talk about it before we hit record that I'm really torn with what direction to take this review. But I think what we'll do is we'll start with the light stuff, and then we'll get into some of the heavier themes the movie deals with. So the light stuff. Let's start with the lighthearted stuff and talk a little bit about sort of educational practices. And for anyone that doesn't know, of course, number one, there will probably be spoilers. So if you haven't seen Dead Poets Society, stop listening now. Go watch Dead Poets Society and come back to us in like an hour and a half. But You know, we'll talk a little bit about the educational stuff, and I think you got to focus on John Keating, obviously Rob Williams' character, and some of his instructional stuff. And I will say, the first thing I was struck with him right away is when he walks out of the back room of his classroom on day one of class and just whistles and walks right out the back door and just says, "All right, guys, come on." And everyone's like completely confused.
I thought the same thing. He comes out, students are clearly confused. He comes out whistling, and then he gets to the back of the classroom, stands at the door, and expects that the kids are going to follow, or the students are going to follow him. He says, "Come on." And they look around, they're confused, and they're like, "Where are we going?" And then he asks them to follow him out of the classroom.
Yeah. And so I thought about, you know, learning environment and changing up the learning environment. So I thought, okay, good practice so far. But then as he goes through that whole like monologue and the whole thing about the previous students and their voice, and then he like has them all lean in and he does this like really weird voice. I just the whole time I'm thinking there is no way these kids would stay this quiet for this whole thing. Like they would be laughing out loud at him pretending to be the voices of these dead former students on the wall.
Well, yeah, I agree. And actually, just after that scene, in the movie, they show the students from his class walking out of the, you know, picture a college campus, or in this case, like a private school or boarding school. So they're walking out of what I'm assuming is the building where the class took place. And one student says that was weird after that first lesson. And one of the main student characters, Neil, says, "Well, it was different." And clearly, you know, that's what he was going for. And I don't know that the message was super clear maybe to all the students. And like you said, I don't know if they would have in the real world been as receptive to it. But it is in the movie, you know, it is depicted as where some students got it and felt it, and some students needed more time to really get into it.
Yeah, I took notes as I went, and I wrote notes to myself, and I had already written, "Would any of this opening actually work? Kids would laugh, I'm sure." And then right after I wrote that is when they walk out and they're like, "Oh, that was weird and different." And so, yeah, but you could see sort of, I did appreciate that they showed sort of the various responses to it. I just don't think it would have worked even in the moment. I don't think even, and maybe it's the private school and the sort of like the time, and it would be different nowadays. Maybe that's what it is. But I just think in the modern day, if I walked my kids to the trophy case at our school and then started talking to them quietly and reciting poetry lines, I don't imagine that my kids would react as awestruck as those students did.
Yeah. And you know, I don't know necessarily what the purpose of that was, but I'm going to maybe stretch it a little bit to say that one of the, you know, talking about educational practices and this character, John Keating, one of the things he did seek to do a few times throughout the movie and just in general with his educational, you know, his instructional practices was to connect learning to life outside the classroom and make it like real world relevant for his students. The message of Carpe Diem, I think, had more to do with that than it did like, "Hey, let's make this a great school year." It was a little bit more like, you know, go seize the day in the sense of whatever you want, go get it. And, you know, I think he had two reasons for doing that. One, connect the learning to outside the classroom, like I said, but also it was clear that his character let his passion shine through in his teaching, and he used humor and lots of other strategies to get through to his students. And maybe he was looking for his students to do the same.
Yeah, I can buy that. I think in general, I felt like the majority of his instructional practices were pretty sound. You know, he did do a lot of times, we see a lot of times throughout the movie of changing the environment. And I think, especially given the rigid, traditional desks in rows structure of that school, that would be received well by students, I think. And it clearly works in the movie setting, but I think, you know, he takes them out to the football field to do lessons. He takes them in the courtyard to walk around on one lesson. You know, he definitely uses that trick, that getting out of our classroom and outside of our four walls to get kids thinking in a different way. And I think that is definitely a sound practice today, even.
Yeah, and it's impressive to think that an English teacher or a poetry teacher, whatever he is, precisely in the movie, I'm not sure, but to use that kind of experiential learning in a subject like that, and it's clear that, you know, his character is a rebel among the faculty at this school. The character was once a student at the school, comes back to replace a teacher that had just retired. And so he's in his first year back at his alma mater, and he's the rebel, and he's not necessarily well received for his rebellious and out of the box teaching practices. That's for sure. As a matter of fact, in one of the opening scenes of when school starts in the movie, they show another teacher, I think it's a science teacher, who tells the students something like, pick three lab experiments from this project list and report on them every 5 weeks. And it was supposed to, I think, compare and contrast the teaching styles. But actually, one of the things I picked up from even that practice was like, hey, that teacher's giving the students some choice in the projects that they do.
You know, it's funny. I thought the same thing as I was watching it. I was like, hey, that's actually not bad. Like, that's not what you... Here's choice and you get to pick. Now, granted, I don't know that I want to do three experiments and report on them every 5 weeks, but he has some choice and that's kind of cool. I was thinking the same thing when I saw that.
I know. But I even wrote, like you, I took some notes and I put PBL ? You know, is that project-based learning a little bit? Like a little, you know, a little sign, a little glimpse of project-based learning?
This is 1989 Hollywood, more advanced than some of our classrooms today in 2000. 19.
Yeah, well, I don't know. I mean, you know, that at one point, one of the more famous scenes from the movie is, of course, when Robin Williams, John Keating character, is his rebellious self, and he's having his students tear pages out of the textbook, you know. So clearly, for the most part, the teaching practices, and I don't think the movie was set in 1989, but clearly the teaching practices in that time frame were not anywhere near what they are today with the textbooks and such, but at least we had some teachers who were straying from the norm, if you will.
Yeah. I think the line in the end of the movie I agreed with the most by far was when Robin Williams calls that entire entry about what poetry is and measuring on a line graph excrement. I think calling that excrement is probably the most accurate line of that movie, because can you imagine just analyzing poetry as like a line graph of its perfection and its form and its intended effect? That sounded awful. I was dying just listening to them read that out loud.
I did like that, and I would say that that's a pretty crucial moment and a nice quote from the movie. I actually, there was another one toward the end of the movie that I did make note of, and Mr. Keating says, okay, so let me just sort of set this up a little bit. The head of the school, or administrator, headmaster, principal, I don't know what he's called, he basically says to Mr. Keating that the curriculum is in place and shouldn't be questioned. And the rebellious Keating obviously is speaking out against it. Well, Keating says, I always thought the point of education is to teach students to think for themselves. And I just thought that was like a really, really critical moment.
It was, and it's a good representation of Keating's philosophy and standpoint at that time. But that's also where things start to go south, and where I have some strong feelings about other parts of this movie. Because what is happening in that scene you're talking about is Admin is starting to come down on his unorthodox teaching practices. And that they're starting to really be annoyed by the things he's doing. He's getting some parent pushback. We see some references to that. And despite the fact that the movie is really centered around the students, as a teacher, I very much see it from Keating's perspective, where he's trying to do something cool. In fact, the actual Dead Poet Society itself was an organization that Keating did when he was in school. And he gets these boys to start it up again by sort of subtly mentioning it and not really encouraging them directly to do it, but knowing that his words are going to have an impact, and then leaving the book behind for Neil, and so it's kind of interesting the way he gets that to happen, and he gets these boys really interested in poetry in a way that I would say probably had not happened up until that point. And nonetheless, despite his results, he's getting a lot of pushback from the administration. And in that moment, what the headmaster replies to that line about, you know, I thought the point was to get them to think for themselves. He says, at their age, God help me know, tradition and discipline, get them ready for college and the rest will work itself out. And I feel like those are the two opposing views that we are still debating in education to this day.
Yeah. You know, I like the points that you're making, and I definitely wouldn't disagree with you at all. As a matter of fact, I wrote in my notes that Keating is sort of the epitome of what an early adopter is. You know, he's extremely forward thinking. He's trying some out of the box things. Like you said, bringing students, you know, outside in the environment, some experiential learning. But he's ahead of his time. And clearly the administration at the school is not ready for that. Parents are not ready. Some of the students are. And, you know, in the final scene that we'll talk about, I'm sure, in isolation, there are some students who are with him and some students who are against him. And, you know, I think that's early adopting at its finest. Some people are just really ready for it. Some people are not, kind of like a growth mindset thing. I had to throw that in there. But yeah, and you know, it's funny because I won't be able to say this for long, but I have myself personally switched into an administrative role now. But I was in my own classroom like a month and a half ago. And so I can kind of see this from both sides, where I am a pretty forward thinker like Keating, and I want to get my students involved and have them find their own voice. And like he says, you know, teach students to think for themselves. At the same time, I'm saying that I'm now an administrator, and I certainly wouldn't want, if there are district or school initiatives that we are asking our teachers to abide by, and a teacher is so rebellious that they just refuse to do it, you know, I got to be honest, on the other side now, I'm like, I don't know about this. Like, you're defying what we're asking you to do.
It is the struggle, the back and forth, right? It is. And I, as a pseudo, you know, kind of administrator, non-classroom, back instructional coach, I always say that the hardest job of the instructional coach is towing that line of between those,
between those two
things, you know. And it's, as a teacher, I was Keating. I would just say no. They would tell me to do things and I would just say no. I'd be like, no, I'm good. I'm not going to do that. I'm going to do what I wanted to do. But my follow-up would always be, because it's good for kids. And I think in the case of John Keating, that doesn't seem to matter to the administration. Or at the very least, they have a different definition of what's good for kids and are measuring by a different scale than what Keating is measuring by.
That's interesting that you brought that up, because I think that point is not only backed by the character, the teacher characters in the movie, but certainly the parents and also some of the students as well, where they're so, because this is a prestigious private boarding school, they're so focused on the jobs that they're going to get afterwards, the colleges that they're going to go to. And clearly that is represented most in the character of Neil, where his father, who I always, you know, I see him, the actor, as the father from that 70s show.
I thought the same
which
thing.
Was a,
I was like,
comedic
real
role.
Jerk in this movie.
I know. And to see him in this like super serious, like jerk of a character, you're like, oh man, it's frustrating. But yeah, I mean, definitely standards in terms of the expectations on the students are skewed, or at least in my opinion, to not what's in the best interest of the student necessarily, but what's in the best interest of the family. And in terms of success, what does that look like? Is it getting into, you know, an Ivy League college, or getting to be a doctor or a lawyer, or whatever the family says is, you know, the epitome of being a professional, you know, after college? I don't know.
Yeah, it is interesting. There definitely are contradictory goals among the various stakeholders in this case. And I wonder if that's true, maybe not as dramatically as it is in the case of this movie, but I'm sure that's true even in our schools now, where we all have sort of different goals. Our students want to sort of enjoy their school day, and we want them, you know, depending on the teacher, want them to be better people or better readers or better whatever. And the administration certainly, at least on some level, probably wants better test scores because that's what they're judged on. And parents probably just want good grades. And none of those things line up correctly because they're all vastly different desires. And I don't know that you can accomplish all of them at the same time.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm going to kind of pull this back now to Keating and his practices, because All of those things, and whether he did them or other people did or didn't like what he was doing, at the end of the day, and I've heard you talk about this and debate this on your show and with your guests, like, it all comes back to the relationship piece, right? So Keating, as a teacher, understood how to do that. He did that by getting to know students, you know, whether it was with Neil and trying to encourage him to not only pursue his passion for acting, but to, I guess, for lack of a better term, stand up to his father and tell him that that's what he wanted to do. But to me, in terms of John Keating and his teaching practices, one of the scenes that I think stands out the most to me was the young Ethan Hawke. He plays a character, Todd Anderson, who is super nervous and shy about speaking in class, sharing his poems. He's that classic introvert of a student, and he clams up. And so Keating gives an assignment where each student needs to create their own poem and recite it in front of the class. And to be honest with you, Brad, actually, I'm glad I had the opportunity to bring this up. It totally reminded of when you, and I forget his name, had that professional poet on your show, and he made you come up with poetry on the spot. Taylor, I was like, oh my Taylor God, Molly. This is, yeah, that's right. That's right. That's right. That's it. Fair. Totally reminded me of that.
I like that. You know, it's interesting you bring that up, because that was one scene, that whole setup was something I struggled with in Keating's practice, because he is so relationship driven. He is so much about having relationship with the students and knowing the students and using that as his avenue into their learning. And when he assigns everybody, when he gives that assignment to everybody, has to write a poem and read it aloud, on his way out the door, he says, "And Mr. Anderson, don't think I don't know that this has you absolutely terrified." And I struggle with that moment, because he's recognizing his struggle, Todd's struggle, but he's not differentiating or modifying to help that student, which I find a little odd. Now, he ends up doing that when the student, because Todd's actual response is he says, "I didn't do it. I didn't do my assignment. I didn't do it." And he kind of forces him up onto the stage and starts him with just making a really loud noise and a yelp, a barbaric yelp. He starts with that, but I felt like at that moment, as Keating's walking out of the room and saying, "I know this is terrifying you," there almost felt like a lack of empathy in that moment to me.
I agree with you. I'm going to bring up another point, though, just to not play devil's advocate, but just to kind of take this from a different perspective. When it comes to, you know, getting to know your students, social emotional learning, restorative practices, whatever you want to call it, you know, we see students in our classrooms and in our schools all the time who seem defiant. Either they have a bad attitude, they get in trouble, they have harsh consequences, they're getting detention, suspensions, or maybe it's just they're not completing homework. And so perhaps if Keating didn't know Todd Anderson as well as he did as a student, and I'm not, you know, I'm not encouraging or I'm not condoning the fact that he like pushed his buttons a little bit, but if he didn't know him enough as a student, he might have just gotten upset with him for not doing his homework. But he knew why he didn't. It wasn't that he just didn't do it. It wasn't that he didn't care about it. It was that he was nervous, and he is that introvert. And to me, I guess the reason why I didn't quite go to the same place you went to is that shot in the movie where, as Todd Anderson is really figuring this whole poetry thing out, and Robin Williams is sitting there, and he kind of, I can't even describe what he squats down and he's like kind of clutching one hand in the other and he's holding it up to his chest. I'm not like a real emotional guy, but like, I think the point of that pose and that scene was like, oh my God, like, I love this student right now and I'm so proud of him for doing what he's doing. So I don't know. I just thought that was such an awesome connection that was made between the teacher and the student.
Yeah, you know what? I'll allow it. Because now as you're saying it, I'm thinking about that, because that is the response to it. When Robin Williams' response to him finally, like, sort of blurting out what he was thinking and improvising a poem, that was clearly the goal. The goal was clearly exactly that.
I'm not saying you can't get upset with him for pushing the buttons like he did and saying, you know, "Look, I know this is taking you out of your comfort zone. I know this is your," what did he say?
This has you utterly terrified, I think is what he says.
Has you terrified. Yeah. You know, so obviously you don't want to strike fear in the heart of your students. But, you know, I think we can all you, me, your listeners, anybody who catches this episode, like, I think we can all come up with some moments in our careers, hopefully we can, where we just didn't quite understand a student until some precise moment, and then it was like, oh man, now I get it, you know. And I think that was it for Keating and Todd Anderson.
Yeah, that's good. Now you've got me thinking, like, what is, like, that I'm thinking about the pose again, like, what is that moment in your career where you had that metaphorical pose, like where you just had to take a step back and go, oh my god, that kid just did something amazing and I played some small part in it?
That's going to be an episode for a different time, because now I'm going to think about that too. It's a good one.
I actually have one off the top of my head. There's like a moment I think back on all the time. Like, as far as an individual moment, like a singular moment, I have one. And I think I've told it on the podcast before, but I got a kid to write a novel. And in 30 days, I got a student to complete the National Novel Writing Month Challenge with me 1 year, a middle school student. And, she ended up being in my room before school with a bunch of other kids writing the last day of November, and got to her word count, her 50,000 words. And the student computer she was on wouldn't let the completion screen work because it was blocked on the school network. So I said, all right, come over to my computer. You can do it here, because I'm not blocked. So she like logs in, does her thing, and gets the completion screen, and it plays this like hooray video for the kid. And she just turns around and looks at me with like tears in her eyes and just goes, I wrote a book. And it was like the most like a proud I've ever been of a student, I think, at least at that point. It was like amazing. So now I'm like, I'm having that moment with Keating. And I know there were moments in that month where I probably pushed her more than she wanted me to, like I did many of my students at that point. So now I'm rethinking everything I said negatively about Keating. And now you're right. He's great. I'm going to stick with it.
Well, no, I mean, it doesn't have to be like that, where it's I'm right, you're wrong. But like, no, I think you're right in the sense that as a teacher, you got to be really careful, or an administrator, you know, anybody who works with students, you got to be careful to push, I guess, you know, in thinking about your scenario there with that student who wrote the novel, and kudos, by the way, that's awesome. You got to be careful. You know, you have to build the kind of relationship and spend the time and make the effort to build the kind of relationship where you know which buttons you can press and which you can't, and when you can press them and when you can't. And that's very difficult. It really is. You know, it's not exactly the same story. This wasn't even one of my students, but last year I had to unfortunately remove a student from class who was being defiant and disruptive. And it was around holiday time, and I didn't know the student that well, and I'm glad I didn't like mess anything up or press the wrong button on him. But I kind of started a conversation about Christmas and, you know, what are you going to get for Christmas, or what do you want for Christmas? And, you know, the student ended up like pouring his heart out to me about how the family didn't have enough money. And it just, my point is that it made me see the student in a much different light, and it definitely reshaped every other interaction that I ever had with that student from there after, because I just learned something, you know, I saw him in a different light. I learned something else about him that I wouldn't have known otherwise.
Hmm. Yeah, that's good. You have to take advantage of those moments, even when they don't seem good on the surface. So,
yeah. Yeah. Which, you know, which I think leads me back to the movie. You know, spoiler alert, I think at this point, again, if you haven't watched it, you definitely want to stop, pause.
If you haven't watched it, this has been a really weird conversation.
Probably, yeah, that's true. And we've spent like, you know, almost a half an hour. All right, anyway, so, okay. Clearly, Keating has a great relationship with at least that small group of students in his class. And again, not all the kids are, you know, worship him the way that some do. As a matter of fact, there's one kid, I don't even remember his name, the character, but there's one student, he's got the red hair. He doesn't buy in really. And he's sort of, the outlier that you see at the end of the movie, even not standing and saying, oh, captain, my captain, all that stuff. But anyway, my point is, tragedy strikes toward the end of the movie, where that embattled character, Neil, who has to face extreme pressure by his family and just wants to follow his passion and pursuit of acting, he takes his own life. And, you know, I think we would obviously be remiss if we did not address some of those social emotional issues in our students that was depicted in this way in this movie.
Yeah. You know, so the school pretty quickly blames Keating. And I don't think it's fair. Obviously, it's not fair. I mean, we're led to believe pretty clearly that it's not fair. But, you know, I struggled with a lot of that. I want to start with the sort of the positive side of it. First of all, in the moment that that really got me, the one that emotionally I thought I was going to lose it, was when right after Neil has done that, Keating is sitting in his classroom by himself and is just like crying at his desk. And
yeah, actually for me, it was even before that when and to back up a little bit, Keating asks Neil if he had spoken to his father, because Neil says, yes, I talked to him and I told him that I wanted to continue acting and he's going to be away and he might not come see my show, but he's on board. And clearly that was a lie. But the moment I thought that was very powerful as well is just after the show and Neil's father pulls him out. He's very angry and he yells at Keating. He says, stay away from my son or something like that. But the look between Keating, who obviously feels really sorry for Neil, and Neil's looking out the car window as they drive away, I was like, oh man, that's like gut wrenching right there.
Mm. Yeah. It's, I've had that moment. I've had moments like that before where a student realizes they've let you down. And that look is just awful. It's awful. Like, it's just, I've had it a few times and it haunts you. And it's not that I did anything wrong. As the teacher, I didn't do anything. I didn't do anything at all. The student made the mistake, did something wrong. But as a teacher, I feel like sometimes it's easier for us to remember that they're kids and they make mistakes and then they have these super serious consequences sometimes. And that is just heart wrenching. And yeah, I felt it for him there too.
And this is why I think Robin Williams was just a genius at acting, whether it be comedic acting or dramatic. I see the side in the look that he gives and the way that his emotions come out there. I totally got the perspective that you had, where he feels like maybe the student let him down in a way, but I also get the sense that he feels like he has let the student down. And I know for me, in my career as a classroom teacher and even in my short-lived career as an administrator already, you know, there have definitely been moments where you're like, oh man, did I just let that student down? Did I just let that teacher down? And you don't want that to happen. You don't hope that that's going to happen. But it's a really tough feeling when you do think it happens. And, you know, I'll just tell a quick story too, just before I stepped out of the classroom a couple months ago, where, there was a student who just wasn't succeeding, in my class and she failed my class first marking period of the year. And she didn't really turn in work. And it was just, we just butted heads a lot. And of course, you know, there was a side of me where I was like, well, she wasn't doing the right thing in class. But then again, I'm like, maybe I was wrong. Like, I could have reached out to her more. And I certainly spent a lot of time on the phone with her parents. I mean, there was a definite effort on my part. But at the end of the day, I left and we never really got to sort of mend that. And I feel like I let that student down. So I get where he's coming from there too.
Yeah. Yeah, I definitely felt for Keating in all of those scenes there out, you know, and there's a scene where before they've even made the decision, he's got his like room, his like personal stuff all packed up and ready to go. Like, he knows what's coming down, and it's just rough. That whole thing is rough to then have the consequences of it after he already feels like he failed that student, you know. Like, that's got to be the worst.
Yeah. No, definitely. I mean, again, you said it before, the school was quick to blame him. you know, that any of that was really his fault for a student choosing to take his own life because he couldn't continue to cope with all the pressures and the stresses that he was experiencing, and to narrow that down to one rebellious teacher who has some very unorthodox teaching practices. I don't know. You know, clearly the school and the parents were assuming that the teacher, in this case, Mr. Keating, had influenced Neil to the point where he just couldn't take it anymore. But it is difficult, and only like a good movie could do. I don't know whether they wanted the audience to believe it was a mistake on Keating's part, or maybe he did it because of the moment. But he goes back into his classroom to finish packing up and taking all of his personal belongings right at the precise moment that not only is his class in session, or his old class in session, but now the head of the school is actually teaching the class. So it's an opportune moment for him to come and steal the scene.
He definitely turns that his exit into a dramatic leave. That is for sure. And you've got to imagine he did it on purpose. I mean, he's just kind of wandering and hanging out in that back room for a little bit, like giving Todd the side eye. Like it's that's set up. He wanted that to happen. Let's be honest.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, look, what kind of teacher is not familiar enough with their schedule to know that, oh, I got to go pick up my stuff. Why don't I wait until I don't have a class? Oh, no, you know what? I'll go in when I actually do and someone else is teaching it.
And from everything we see, he only teaches the one class. So I don't really think it's not like
I know,
he could
yeah,
have
that's,
mixed up his schedule.
That's another interesting dramatic take on a teacher's life or a teacher's schedule. I don't see him teaching any other classes.
25 kids a day, one period, super easy.
Must be nice.
Must be.
All right, so he comes back into the classroom, and he makes that dramatic entrance. He said, I came to collect my personals. He asks the head of the school, do you want me to come back? And he says, no, come get your stuff. Right as I'm teaching class. And so then we get the whole oh, captain, my captain, standing on the desk scene when he's leaving. So
the whole thing further shows the headmaster's like complete lack of awareness for what's going on in his school, by the way. Like, if he were smart in that moment, he could have said, you know what? No, come back later, like in 45 minutes when this class ends. No, like, you didn't need to let him come in right now. You could have said no, but you said yes because you are so oblivious that those kids were not okay with the decision you made because you think they all signed that paper and that means they're on board with you.
Yeah, that's true. That's definitely true. I don't, you know, and it, again, it's, you know, cinematic moments here. Like, what would the end of the movie have been if Keating comes to class and the head of the school says, you know what, come back later and get your stuff? Obviously, that's not going to happen.
Minutes of Robin Williams standing in a hallway waiting. That's the end of the movie now.
I mean, he did have a couple of minutes where he's in his little office and he's like, smirking at the comments the teacher's making. And he, like you said, giving the side eye to the Ethan Hawke character. But all right, so he walks out of his little office, collects his stuff, and as he's going from one corner of the room to the other, that's when Todd Anderson, Ethan Hawke, stands up and says, "Oh, Captain, my Captain," and climbs on the desk. And of course, the headmaster of the school just goes crazy at that point.
And then everybody follows. Well, not everybody, but many of the students follow behind. And what I thought was kind of interesting about that scene is that, first of all of the members of the Dead Poets Society obviously stand up on their desks. Other than the one you mentioned, the redhead, Stephen Meeks is the character's name. And he doesn't stand up, but the other ones all stand up, of course. But some other characters who we really haven't seen in the movie very much or at all. And because there's one boy, I was like, has he even been in this movie up until this point?
Well, there was actually one who you do see at one point. Actually, it was the same timing in the movie where Ethan Hawke has his whole like come to Jesus moment with his poetry. So that student, I don't even know if his character had a name, probably did. That student creates the poem about like a cat, and it's like a one liner, and it it's so brief and basic. And actually, you know, we didn't talk about this before too. Robin Williams or John Keating, he doesn't just brush it aside. He doesn't get mad at the student. He says to him something to the effect of, you know, sometimes the simplest poems can be some of the most beautiful. I thought that was a really cool teaching moment there. But so that kid is, that student is one of the last ones to get up on the desk. And I think, I guess to go back to my growth mindset thing, it was a subtle way of saying like, look, just because some people might be so resistant to something one moment doesn't mean they won't come around eventually. And with some people, it'll just take a little bit more time.
Yeah. And I think the other thing I took when I saw him stand up, it's like, he may still not like poetry, but that doesn't mean he doesn't like Keating. That doesn't mean he doesn't respect the man and the teacher. You know, sometimes a kid may not like your subject, but that doesn't mean they don't respect you.
That's a good point. And I was thinking something along the same lines, and I actually just had a conversation with one of my teachers this afternoon about something similar, because she said something to the effect that, like, sometimes a teacher can sort of pour their heart and soul out into a lesson and into a class, and the students just don't necessarily seem to receive it as well as you want them to. And I sort of stopped her there and I said, you know what? I hear you, but sometimes I think students can definitely appreciate the difference between teachers who do that and teachers who don't. And they also sometimes won't show it in the moment, but they'll show it like weeks, months, even years later, and they'll come back and say, oh man, I remember when you did blah, 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 blah. For me in the classroom, believe it or not, and I'm almost embarrassed to admit this, but it was sort of like my thing. It became my shtick. I would throw books at students. I don't know. I was a reading teacher, an ELA teacher. I had a lot of books, and sometimes kids just needed a good book thrown at them. But it wasn't like a malicious thing. It was just like a, hey, why don't you pay attention to me kind of thing. And I don't know. It just sort of became something that I was like known for. And so that's what I thought of too when I thought of that scene, that this kid, when he finally stands up and he's, like you said, kind of respecting the teacher, may not love the subject, may not have received it like some of the other students did, but he's like, you know what? You're a cool guy and I'm on board with you. You know, I'm on your side.
Plus I get to stand on a desk and this all seems like fun. Yeah, no, I think the end scene is solid. I think, you know, I don't know that we would get that kind of direct display in a real classroom environment. I think that's dramatically emphasized. But I can tell you that one year I played an April Fool's joke on my students and convinced them that I was getting fired. And they had some very strong reactions, even classes you wouldn't expect. So maybe you would. You never know. You never really know.
That's funny. That's really funny.
There's a YouTube video of it out there somewhere of my students' responses. It's pretty funny.
Wow.
But so I think you would get a response that would be intense. And I think that's a realistic practice for a great teacher who is respected and you know, looked up to. I think that's valid. And of course, dramatically, it's a fun scene for all of them to say, you know, read the line and, oh, captain, my captain. It's good stuff. I like it.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, I just think at the end of the day, like you said before, I think the movie does follow the students more so. You know, even though Keating is a very central character in the movie, he's not the main character. But you know, he steals the show, and this is a discussion about the educational value. And so Keating is what we've been focusing on. And I think at the end of the day, what I take away from the movie, what I compare back to the world of education and teaching, is just the fact that he was so passionate about what he did. And I just think back to the fact that we talk all the time as educators about, you know, at the end of the day, what students remember is not necessarily all the things that they learned in class, but, you know, how you were as a teacher, how you made them feel, how comfortable they felt in your class, how much fun they had in your class. And he's that kind of guy.
Yeah, I agree. And I think, for our second educational movie review, it's sound educationally. It's sound practice.
Yeah, definitely. I was just going to say, like, you ask that question on your show all the time about, who was your favorite teacher and why? And I know you've said before that, it intended to be for a while. English teachers, I don't know why, but I think overall, I've also heard you say that clearly, like without a doubt, it's the experiences and the mannerisms of the teacher's style, the teacher's humor, all the things that they bring to the table on almost a personal level and not necessarily the content or curriculum that makes a teacher someone's favorite.
Yeah. So Keating is fully supporting my beliefs in education. I like that. I like that wrap up, Dan. I think we're going to wrap it up with that.
Yeah. And let me say one more thing, because there was one more sort of quote, I guess, that came out of the movie that I sort of wanted to end on here. There's something, and I don't remember whether this is a John Keating original or whether it was from one of the poems. I don't know. You might be able to help me out with that. But it says, "The powerful play goes on, and you must contribute a verse. What will your verse be?" And I thought that was like a really powerful moment, and just like a, you know, that deeper message behind the John Keating character, that he was really trying to inspire his students to just get out there and be somebody and do something.
Yeah, it is. It is from "O Mio Life" by Walt Whitman, by the way. But it is definitely a great verse from that. A lot of Keating's lines come from poetry. But yeah, it is. I like that. What verse will you add to the powerful play? That's a good little poetic moment.
I mean, and it could go for, you know, obviously in the case of the movie, it was really targeted at the students. But, you know, with our discussion here on the educational value or lack thereof of Dead Poets Society, although I think we proved that there is lots of educational value and good sound teaching practices, I think, you know, it goes to show that it could stand for teachers as well. You know, John Keating clearly contributed his own verse to what was happening at Welton Academy or whatever that school was called. And for teachers out there who may or may not be listening to this, it's the same thing. What will your verse be? You know, we always talk about creating content, or just creating good sound instruction in your classroom, and, you know, find your space and live in it and just do your thing.
Beautiful. I don't think I even have to say anything. Wrap that up. Wrap it on a nice little bow for me. I appreciate it, Dan. Well, Dan, I have a
nice mic in front of me. I'm not about to drop it, but
that's okay.
You know, I think you know what I'm saying.
I wouldn't drop my baby either. It's okay. Dan, thank you so much for joining me on the show. Thank you for talking to me thank you. That was terrible. Thank you for talking to me about Dead Poets Society today in the Educational Movie Review, the second guest to join me on the Educational Movie Review. And, you know, I really appreciate your time as always.
Thank you, man. Thanks for having me back. And thanks for getting me to watch that movie again, because it's a really good one. And I was just happy to watch it again. But even better that we got to talk about it.
Yeah, absolutely. And of course, if you want to check out Dan's podcast, that is the Leader of Learning podcast, which is a great show. I highly recommend it. And you can also find Dan on Twitter. He's at @dcrinus. Links to both of those, of course, will be in the show notes. Anything else I missed for you, Dan?
Carpe diem, brother. Carpe diem.
Carpe diem. Find your verse. Have a great night, man.
You too.
Dan, as always, thank you so much for your time. I always love chatting with you and look forward to seeing you in a couple months at ISTE. If you want to connect with Dan, you can find him on Twitter. He's at @dcrinus, and you can find his podcast, leaderoflearning.com. I highly recommend his show to all educators, regardless of whether you yourself view yourself as a leader. And if you go back to episode 32 of his show, you'll even hear him interview me. If you have comments or questions about the show, you can always connect with me on Twitter or Instagram at Brad Schreffler. I love to hear from you guys there. That's also a great place to connect if you'd like to be a guest on the show, or the feedback page of my website, which gives you additional options for feedback, which you can find at bradschreffler.com/feedback. Until next week, what verse will you contribute to a powerful play? Music for the Planning Period podcast is the song "Vicious" by Kevin MacLeod, used under Creative Commons. You can find him at incompetech.com. The Planning Period podcast is also a proud member of the VoiceEd Radio Network, a 24-hour radio network all about education all the time. VoiceEd Radio, your voice is right here.